Well, as was mentioned in the announcements, it does seem that the signs of spring are in the air, the flowers beginning to bloom, the birdies chirping, and of course, one of my favorite signs of spring, the roar of the engines coming from Daytona International Speedway. Most of you know, I am a NASCAR fan, and so, you know, Daytona 500 was a couple weeks ago, and so NASCAR is back in season, much to my delight. I don't follow NASCAR like I used to. I still like to listen to it. If I'm doing paperwork in my office or something, I'll have it on in the background. If I'm doing yard work, I don't follow any one particular driver the way I used to years ago. It seems like every time I had a favorite driver, they would either get killed or nearly killed. And so I was kind of felt like maybe I was bad luck. Not that we believe in luck. I still am a Ford guy. I pull for the Fords, but you know, whatever. And, you know, I have had a chance to watch a couple races this year. And one of the things that you will notice about racing that may not be intuitively obvious is that the fastest car out on the track usually doesn't look like the fastest car on the track, right? Sometimes you see the guys who are diving down deep into the turns, hard on the brakes, and they're fishtailing when they come out, and you think, man, that guy's got to be really holding on to that thing, the ride of his life, where you see another guy's just kind of smooth, boring in, boring out. Well, the guy that's taking the more boring line most often will actually have the faster time around the track. And it reminds me of an old saying in NASCAR, which is that you got to slow down to go fast. You know, you don't want any wild, jerky movements of the wheel or harsh movements on the throttle. You got to be more steady. More smooth, move more finesse, sort of a light touch is required in order to get the fastest time around the track. It's kind of in that vein I want to think about a spiritual tool today. Mr. Braun talked about meditation, and I am going to talk about fasting. Life gets busy for all of us. Life gets busy for all of us. School, work, doctor's appointments. My parents shared with me, after my dad retired, my mom and dad said they were never so busy in all their lives until they retired. And that first 5 or 10 years or so after they retired, they were just constantly running and doing things. You know, it did slow down a little bit later on. But, you know, we get busy, right? There's the hustle and bustle of life. Things come up, and we often think really the only answer is to do more, to cram it all in. I'll sleep when I'm dead, right? I've said that a million times myself. Even spiritually speaking, sometimes we can have a tendency to do this, to cram everything in. Sometimes we think we're at our best as a Christian when we're doing a lot. Well, I called 7 widows this week, and I visited 3 people, and I made this for snacks for Bible study, and that for the potluck, and yada, yada, yada. And those are good things to do, right? Those are great ways to serve others, and that's fantastic. But sometimes, you know, maybe we get so caught up in doing those physical things, maybe we lack a little bit in other areas. Maybe we get so caught up in going fast to do those physical things, we overlook a key opportunity for spiritual growth. The title of my sermon today is Slow Down, ... Go Fast. Slow down, go fast. And we're going to look today at the spiritual tool of fasting. We're going to look at some basics of the how-tos of fastings, and then get into some of the whys, why we fast. Now, let's begin our discussion with looking at some of the practical points of fasting. Now, when we fast, we need to be wise about things. Some have health consideration. This question comes up every year around atonement. Now, somebody who's maybe got low blood sugar issues, and if they don't get, you know, a certain amount of food in every day, they get faint and pass out. I've been at more than one atonement service where I've seen somebody pass out because of low blood sugar. And so what I will advise those folks is that if you need to take a little bit of food, or if it's a certain medication, you need to have some water, then that's fine. You know, God, the whole point of afflicting our soul and fasting is not to wind up in the hospital or even worse, right? So sometimes there's a medical need to do that. If you've never fasted before, you might need to kind of break yourself into it a little bit. Now, I realize most of us have here, and so this might apply more for if you're very new in church or if you have children, younger children that you're trying to teach how to fast. Sometimes what you need to do is maybe just instead of going a whole day without food, maybe skip a meal or cut down on a portion or something and see how your body reacts. So there is kind of a learning curve there, and I think that's wise. And we are here, of course, talking about a personal fast. We're not talking about the commanded fast of that we do once a year on atonement. Another thing to be considered is that a personal fast doesn't necessarily need to be from sunset to sunset. Again, for atonement, that's clearly lined out. It is to be, but a personal fast doesn't necessarily need to be from sunset to sunset. You might choose, you know, if your family eats dinner very regularly at 6 o'clock at night, and here we are coming up to the time change where it's not getting dark till 7 or whatever, maybe you choose to do it from dinner to dinner. There are times, especially when I found myself in the working world in manufacturing, it actually worked better for me to go from lunch to lunch. So with the personal fast, we can kind of make those variations. It doesn't necessarily have to be 24 hours. I remember a particular occasion when there was something that I was going through, and so I was fasting because I was, you know, seeking guidance from God on a particular situation that involved another person. And about 22 hours into the fast, it became very clear to me what I needed to do. I felt like God had kind of answered me and guided me, and so I picked up the phone, I called this person, we worked through this particular issue, and after I got off the phone, I broke my fast. It was only, you know, 22 and a half hours or whatever it was. Likewise, some fasts might go longer. Moses, Elijah, and Jesus Christ fasted for 40 days. Now, I would not necessarily recommend anyone to try that. I do believe that the Bible was true and that those men physically did it. I do also believe that that was divine intervention and a very special sort of a thing that happened at that time. But, you know, I think more practically speaking for us personally, I've known some who would maybe go on a 3-day fast, and maybe instead of it being a complete fast, they would limit themselves to just a certain amount of water each day so that they can continue to function. So there is some room for variation. Aside from all that, it's worth noting that fasting does have a health benefit. Provides an opportunity to cleanse our bodies. Not that that's why we fast in the context we're talking about today, but it's worth noting it does have some benefit in that regard. Now, something else, sort of a practical tip if you're fasting. If you are married and you are fasting, it's probably wise to let your spouse know. If they have gone into the effort of making a nice dinner for you that night and you go to eat and they say, oh, I'm not eating, you could create some issues, right? You could create some issues. At the very least, it might have been a little bit of an inconvenience. You know, maybe your wife was prepared a special meal because she thought it was your favorite and she wanted to do that. And so you want to let them know in advance. Also, it's very often you find that married couples will fast together because whatever issue is affecting one is likely affecting the other. If there's things going on, you know, if you help out with your kids, you know, baseball team, right, and you've got a game on Sunday and you're going to be out in the hot sun all day and you're helping coach and things like that, you know, it's probably not wise for you to be faint and weak. Or as Mr. Braun talked about with meditation, you know, if you operate heavy machinery, now that's probably not a great time to be, you know, physically weak and maybe not 100% mentally alert. So there are some things that you should consider when you fast. You know, I mentioned that married couples sometimes fast together. When I was approached to go into the ministry, actually, I asked a friend of mine to fast with me because it was a major decision in life. If you remember, we talked a little bit about this and about Esther there in the announcements. Esther actually asked others to fast with her. Let's go ahead and turn there. Esther chapter 4, don't want to get too much of a spoiler here for the ladies' tea, but we'll just touch on this very quickly. In Esther chapter 4, we'll pick it up starting in verse 13, but just to give a quick background, you know, Esther was the queen of Persia. The Jews had been in captivity by the Babylonians. The Babylonians had been conquered by the Persians. She found herself appointed queen. Haman was had it out for the Jews and basically issued a kill order, made it open season on any Jews. That was going to start about a year from now because he had it out against Mordecai, which Mordecai, of course, was Esther's actually cousin. Not, we often think of him as her uncle, and maybe in terms of age relationship that was true, but regardless, Esther found herself in this position, and Mordecai thought perhaps she might be able to use her position to help save the Jewish people. Now, one of the things you have to know about the Persians is that when they wrote a law, that was a law, and you weren't changing it. You weren't going to go back and undo that law. What you could do, and of course what did happen, is that you could write a law that would sort of counteract that one. And what happened was that a second law was written that said the Jews were allowed to defend themselves, and of course they did. But that's another story. But when she was approached to maybe use her position to intervene and help the people, she was hesitant at first. She didn't want to do it. Word got back to her cousin Mordecai that she didn't want to do it, and so he sent word to her, you know, letting her know thousands of lies are on the line. If you pick it up in verse 13, it says, Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise from the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish." Now, Mordecai knew that eventually it was going to get out that Esther was Jewish. And the king, rather than look like he was weak in any way and sparing his wife, would have had to allow her to be killed too, because the law, he said that the Jews could be killed. And Mordecai points out the reality is word is going to get out and you're going to die. And also, by the way, if you don't do this, God is going to save his people one way or another. So tremendous amount of faith there on Mordecai's part. But notice what he says here next, the last part of verse 14. It says, "Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Underline this verse, highlight it, star it, do something. And use this as a reminder. You know, we don't know how and when and where we are brought into certain situations. Sometimes, you know, it thinks we are in the deepest, darkest mires of the earth. Well, Jeremiah probably didn't enjoy being down in the dungeon, right, up to his armpits and all the swill. But, you know, God had a purpose for him. Mordecai puts to Esther, you know, "I know you're scared. I know you think you might die. But you also, how do you know that maybe God didn't put you in this position in order to serve him?" A powerful question, a powerful thought, one that's always worth asking ourselves. Well, this certainly opened up and pricked Esther's conscience because she answers and says, "Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, 'Go, gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night nor day. My maids and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish.'" She said, "You know what? Forget it. I'm all in. Let's go for it. Let's see what happens. You know, you're right. If I do nothing, everybody's going to die. And if I die, I die. What difference does it make?" But she asked, when making that decision, she asked for her people to fast with her. Of course, they did. And you know the story. She was able to go grant the king's favor and save her people. So we see this of other people fasting with one another. I know when my wife was sick, many of you did fast for her. If I didn't say it before, thank you. Appreciate that very much. It meant a lot to us. While fasting oftentimes can be a spur of the moment thing, as it was here with Esther, it's kind of in the moment. She said, "You know what? We need to do this. We need to go right now." Fasting doesn't have to be unplanned. Fasting doesn't have to be unplanned. In fact, fasting should be a regular part of a Christian's life. Turn over to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. We're going to start in verse 1 and pick up some context. Actually, starting in verse 1 is really kind of breaking into the middle of this sermon here that Jesus Christ is giving. But we're going to start chapter 6, verse 1. Of course, this is Christ speaking. He says, "Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward." So, you know, Christ was pointing out those who would make a big deal of how they serve. You know, they kind of tooted their own horn sometimes in a quite literal way to say, "Look at the good I am doing." Right? And Jesus Christ says that's very hypocritical. Don't do it that way. But notice what he says. He says, "Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men," in verse 1. In verse 2, he says, "Therefore, when you do a charitable deed." He says, when you do a charitable deed. And let me ask you this. As a disciple of Jesus Christ, do you think it's optional for us that we should do good deeds for others from time to time? You can't do it all the time, right? But from time to time, when we have an opportunity, should we do something good to serve others? Well, yeah, obviously, right? We don't think that's an optional part of being a disciple of Jesus Christ. We know that's something we're expected to do from time to time. It doesn't say if you do it. He says when you do it. That in mind, move down to verse 16. He says, "Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say, they have the reward. But you, when you fast, anoint your head with oil, wash your face." And he goes on to talk about, you know, we shouldn't try to look overly sad and get sympathy from people. But again, here he says, when you fast, not if you do it. What this points to is that Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, expects fasting to be a part of our lives, something that we do regularly. Now, we all, of course, understand that we do this once a year, for sure, on the Day of Atonement, but it should be done more often than that. Now, I'm not going to sit here and set any sort of a precedence that says, well, you need to do it this often or that often or anything like that. Certainly, I will give you some examples of when you might do it. Passover is just about 5-6 weeks away. And when we enter that time of self-examining, it's an excellent time for us to fast. For those folks who I counsel for baptism, I always ask that before we actually get to the baptism, once we finish counseling, they take a day, set that aside for some prayer and some fasting, and not some fast, but for prayer and for fasting. I tell you what I do personally. I actually have a reminder in my phone, and about once a month, it pops up, and it just says, "Fast? Question mark, question mark, question mark." And what I do is that's just a kind of a reminder for me personally. Oh, you know what? Maybe I haven't fasted in a while. Maybe I need to take a day to do that. Now, it's not a hard date. I don't look at it and say, oh, well, I got to go fast. No, but it's just a reminder for me. Now, you know what? I haven't done this in a while. Maybe I should do that. So some things to consider there. Now, with all that being said, let's turn our attention to why we fast. As I mentioned at the outset, sometimes we need to slow down and go fast. Maybe it's because we need some time for introspection, as I said, as we prepare for Passover. Perhaps we're dealing with a persistent sin, an addiction, something that we are having trouble overcoming, and we need some additional help. Maybe it's not a problem. Maybe it's just an area that we feel like we could grow in. Maybe we recognize, you know, maybe I'm not as compassionate towards other people as I should be. So maybe we take a day set aside for some fasting and maybe do a little extra Bible study. You know, you'd be surprised how much time it takes to prepare a meal and then eat it. You know, usually if you're making a meal from scratch, if you're like me, it takes at least an hour for that, and then it takes me about, you know, 10 minutes to eat. But, you know, hey, there's an hour and 10 minutes of extra time where maybe we could do a little study on the subject of compassion and understand better how we can be more compassionate. I want to read a little section here. This is from the UCG booklet, Tools for Spiritual Growth. It says this. It says, proper fasting often results in significant spiritual breakthroughs. While we rely on the spiritual tools of prayer, Bible study, and meditation on a daily basis, we occasionally need the power tool of fasting. I like that term, the power tool of fasting, right? And points that out to us. We see there's a very actually famous example of this in Jesus Christ illustrated to his disciples in Matthew chapter 17. Turn forward a few chapters here, Matthew chapter 17. We're going to pick it up in verse 14. Matthew 17 and verse 14. It says, and when they had come to the multitude, this was Christ and his disciples. So when they come to the multitude, a man came to him, kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and suffers severely. Excuse me. And he often falls into the fire and often in the water. So I brought him to your disciples, but they could not cure them. So this was a very severe issue that was going on. This man has likely been going on for years, right? And the man had come to Christ's disciples trying to have him healed, but unfortunately it didn't happen. It didn't happen. So the man comes to Jesus Christ. Verse 17, Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I bear with you? Now, most people assume that Jesus Christ is talking to this man, but by context, we understand he's actually talking to his disciples, saying, you know, they were the ones who lacked the faith. He says, how long shall I bear with you? Bring him here to me. And Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour. So Jesus rebukes the demon, heals the individual, but that's not where the story ends. Verse 19, the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, why could we not cast it out? You know, they were kind of scratching their heads. Well, why did that work for you? We said the same thing. You know, we did the same stuff. How come it worked for you and not for us? Jesus Christ said, so Jesus said to them, because of your unbelief, for surely I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. This is a scripture that I actually meditate on a little bit and think about this. You know, do I have the faith that I could tell a mountain to pick up and move? You know, I made the joke in Charlotte. I don't think I have the faith that if I told that chair that it could get up and go, right? You know, but Jesus Christ says, if you had that faith, you could do it. It's a tremendous amount of faith. And that's the kind of faith we all need and all we all want to have. Right? But I haven't met anyone that's been able to move a mountain just yet. He goes on and says, however, this kind does not go out except by prayer and fasting. Jesus Christ indicates that sometimes we need a little bit more than just prayer. It's also interesting that this fasting, this man came and approached Jesus, and he immediately removed the demon from the boy. He didn't stop, fast a day, and then come back. What this points to is that a part of Jesus' regular life was periodic fasting. And that the clear teacher here, the clear point from this story, is that fasting should be a part of our lives to help us increase our faith. Help us increase our faith. You know, we need to afflict our souls sometimes so that we recognize just how much we need God. You know, we choose to do a fast and we go without 24 hours, and by the end of that, you know, we're usually getting pretty hungry, maybe we're not feeling great, and we recognize just how much I need food. Most of us can miss one meal and that's okay, you know, maybe not notice it. Miss two meals, well, I'm starting to get pretty hungry. you miss a whole day, you know, food and water, you're going to notice it unless you're exceptionally good shape, you know. You're going to notice that. And so fasting has a way of humbling us and drawing us closer to God. Or in the context of today's message, when we fast, we slow down. When we fast, we slow down. Slow down, go fast. And then when we fast, we do slow down. Fasting needs to have a point and a purpose. It's not just a thing that we do, a box that we check so often. It has to have meaning. Note what Jesus said there in Matthew 17. It's a combination, prayer and fasting. If we simply go a day without food and hope something good happens, we'll lose a couple pounds, and that's probably about all that we will do. Now, we need to understand the main goal behind fasting. The main goal behind fasting is this: humble yourselves, draw closer to God, and seek His will. That is the main purpose behind fasting. I'll say that again. The main goal, main purpose in fasting is to humble ourselves, draw closer to God, and seek His will. We might be trying to overcome a sin. We might be trying to make a major decision. But you know, if our attitude isn't humble, if our attitude isn't to yield to God's will and better understand His desire for what us to do, for what it is we should do in life, that fast is just not going to be productive. Fasting needs to be symbolic of ourselves fully submitting ourselves and yielding ourselves to God. You know, we recognize in that short 24 hours or so how much we need food, but a bigger picture is we need to recognize how much we need God, how much we need to understand His will, His direction for our lives. Turn to Psalm 109. Psalm 109. I'm going to start here in verse 1 of Psalm 109. Psalm 109 and verse 1. This is a Psalm of David. And he says, "Do not keep silent, O God of my praise, for the mouth of the wicked and the mouth of the deceitful have opened against me. They have spoken against me with a lying tongue. They have also surrounded me with words of hatred and fought against me without a cause." Here's a psalm of David when he was in distress. It doesn't say exactly what it was about, but, you know, he was feeling the pressure from those who were his enemies. And it's clear that he's not only looking to God for deliverance, he is wholly submitting himself to God. Skip ahead a little bit to verse 21, still Psalm 109. He says, "But you, O God the Lord, deal with me for your name's sake, because your mercy is good. Deliver me." Now here, even in the midst of his affliction, David is praising God. And he's asking God for His mercy. He's not asking me, "Make me stronger so I can go beat my enemy down." He's asking for God's mercy. He acknowledges His goodness. That's an important lesson for us. You know, even in difficult trials, if we're facing something hard, something unpleasant, maybe it's a health trial, you know, there's still time and opportunity that when we go to God, we should still be praising Him. Yes, it's okay to ask Him for help. It's okay to ask Him for mercy. It's okay to ask Him for an answer, but we have to recognize we may not get a direct answer exactly the way we wanted. But we should still be praising God and be grateful for the mercy He has shown us to that point. Verse 22, he says, "For I am poor and needy, and my heart is wounded within me. I am gone like a shadow when it lengthens. I am shaken off like a locust." You know, he recognizes how weak and feeble he is and how frail life is and how much he depends on the Lord. Verse 24, he says, "My knees are weak through fasting, and my flesh is feeble from a lack of fatness." So you know, he talks about fasting here and the physical weakness that he experiences. And one of the things about fasting is that when you start to get weak like this, it begins to strip off your inhibitions a little bit. It begins to kind of chip away at that pride. There's just something maybe kind of unquantifiable about exactly how that happens, but I'm sure we've all experienced it. Right? When we take that time, we start to get hungry. We start to realize how weak we are. The pride seems to go away. We're probably not quite as punchy as we are with a smart comment. I've noticed in myself, even if I'm fasting and then I'm on the road driving and down the road and somebody cuts me off, it just doesn't bother me the way it normally does. You know, I just don't get bent out of shape. Kind of has a way of taking us down a notch. Verse 26, he says, "Help me, O Lord my God, O save me according to your mercy, that they may know that this is your hand, that you, Lord, have done it." You know, again, he's putting the honor and glory on God. He says, don't do this to make me look good in front of my enemies. He said, let it be done to your glory, not mine. Verse 30, he says, "I will greatly praise the Lord with my mouth. Yes, I will praise him among the multitude, for he shall stand at the right hand of the poor to save him from those who condemn him." As Mr. Braun mentioned in the first message, you know, sometimes these psalms, oftentimes they start off with these cries for help and mercy, and they transition to this point of praise and gratitude towards God. And I think that's a wonderful lesson for us to learn, whether we're fasting or not. So we see a very wonderful example from David here about the right attitude to have during fasting. It's interesting, though, maybe one of the best teachings we have about fasting actually comes from an example where people didn't have the right attitude. Probably know where I'm going with this, over in Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58, we'll start in verse 1 here. Isaiah 58, verse 1. It says, "Cry aloud and spare not. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Tell my people their transgressions and the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways as a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching God. Why have we fasted, they said, and you have not seen? Why have we afflicted our souls, and you take no notice? In fact, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure and exploit all your laborers." So the Lord here is kind of saying, you know, the people were saying, "Well, hey, God, we want to do what you say. We want to keep these commandments right. You know, look at us. We're fasting. We're doing all the right things. How come things aren't going our way?" You know, kind of ask at that. In the last part of verse 3, he says, "You know what? You're doing it with the wrong attitude. You're doing it with the wrong attitude." You know, it seems there was an issue there that they were abusing their brothers and sisters. They were taking advantage of one another, and they were looking for, you know, something to go their way to help them, but overall their attitude and their approach to God and their brethren was wrong. So there's this attitude of hypocrisy. Verse 4 says, "Indeed, you fast for strife and debate and to strike with the fist of wickedness. You will not fast as you do this day to make your voice heard on high." Now he pointed out they were fasting for all the wrong reasons. There's some hypocrisy going on, and they were doing it sort of as a hunger strike. You know, I think about the prophets of Baal right there on Mount Carmel. When you know, their God didn't hear them, they started jumping up and down, hooping and hollering and cutting themselves and saying, "Hey, don't you see us down here?" You know, and it's kind of what's going on is that the people were sort of more or less going on a hunger strike. "Look, Lord, we're trying to do the right thing." But their attitude was all wrong. Verse 5, he says, "Is it a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush?" Kind of like what we read there in Matthew chapter 6. You know, people are saying, "Oh, I'm so faint from fasting." You know, God saw the people were, they're bowing down like a bulrush. You know, there's kind of a physical act there, lying over. "Look how weak I am." He says, "Is that what this is about, to spread out sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this a fast and an acceptable day to the Lord? You know, it's a rhetorical, almost sarcastic question being said here. He said, do you really think I'm going to listen to you when you're practicing such hypocrisy? Verse 6, is this not the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out when you see the naked and cover him, and not hide yourself from your own flesh? Here he's doing a little bit of a compare and contrast. He said, this is the kind of attitude you need to have. Instead of fasting so that you can take advantage and hurt others, you know, you should be fasting to see how you can serve and help people. Verse 8 says, then your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth speedily. Your righteousness shall go up before you. You know, he's saying, if you follow and do this fast the right way, the glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. You shall call and the Lord will answer. You shall cry and he will say, here I am. No, God may not give us a specific answer if we go into a fast with a specific question. Sometimes he does work that way. But what this points out is that when we humble ourselves, when we submit ourselves to God, when we go and fast before him with the right attitude to seek his will and better understand him, he will guide and direct our lives. Verse 12, those from among you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations, and you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. And he says, if you yield yourselves to me in a proper way through fasting, he says, I am going to work with you. I am going to help you, and I'm going to use you to do my work. When we go in looking for guidance in a proper way, God will use us to do his work. Fasting is an awesomely powerful tool that God gives us. We might use it when we have trouble. We might use it when we need some guidance from time to time, or we simply need to grow. But whenever we need to do it, we need to understand this in regards to fasting. The main purpose in fasting is to humble ourselves, draw close to God, and seek his will. Brethren, when life gets difficult, you're not quite sure what to do. Slow down. Go fast.